season, Salmon Management Teleconference season. We greatly appreciate you taking the time to join us as we begin another important season of discussions surrounding the management and future of Yukon River salmon. My name is Serena Alstrom, Executive Director of the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association, and it is my pleasure to serve as your host throughout this teleconference season. These calls will be held every Tuesday from June through the end of August. Throughout the season, we'll provide updates on Yukon River salmon run assessments, environmental conditions, research and monitoring efforts, and ongoing management activities. I'd like to extend a warm welcome to all new participants joining us today. We also encourage young fishers to participate in these calls to learn, engage, and become involved in Yukon River fisheries issues and management. These teleconferences provide an important opportunity for people from across the Yukon River to share observations, concerns, and local conditions. We encourage fishermen, tribal representatives, researchers, managers, and community members to actively participate. Your knowledge and experience help build a broader understanding of the challenges facing our salmon and river communities. We would also like to thank our funding partners, the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission and the Tanana Chiefs Conference, for their continued support in making these calls possible. For many years, these teleconferences have served as a communication bridge between local users and fishery managers across the 2,200 miles of the Yukon River. As salmon declines and changing river conditions continue to affect our communities, the need for open communication remains critical. However, the challenges we face today require more than information sharing alone. They require collaboration, problem solving, and action. Our goal is to ensure these calls remain a platform for meaningful discussions, actionable feedback, and collaborative solutions that can be shared with management agencies, organizations, and decision makers. By working together, we can identify practical opportunities to improve fishery management and support the long-term health of the Yukon River salmon. As we move through the 2026 season, I ask that all participants please be respectful of one another. This space is for constructive dialogue and shared learning. By listening to and supporting one another, we can foster productive conversations that benefit our fisheries and our communities. Leanna, for your time, participation, and commitment to the Yukon River. The Yurtfa in-season subsistence salmon survey is currently underway. We thank the National Park Service and NOAA for funding the program this year. This year, the surveyors are utilizing a digital app version of the program, and we hope to make it available to the public soon. We will update you when it's ready to download from the App Store. We want to encourage fishers in the in-season survey communities to reach out to their local surveyor and share what they are seeing on the river. This program is a way for fishers to anonymously share their observations as well as their concerns or challenges with the managers and the rest of the river. The in-season survey communities include Algonac, Mountain Village, Marshall, Russian Mission, Anvik, Puslia, Ruby, Tanana, Fort Yukon, and Eagle. Just some housekeeping before we get started. Like always, please press *6 to mute and unmute your line. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press *6 to mute and unmute. Background noise and conversations are disruptive to callers who are sharing important information. First, I'd like to ask if there is any media on the line today. Can you please announce yourself? Do we have any of our government representatives or staff members on the call team?
Hi, Serena, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, this is Brooke Fisher, and I'm with the Division of Subsistence with ADS&G. Thank you.
Thank you.
Serena?
Yes.
Yeah, John Lamont, alternate panel member.
Welcome.
Hi, Serena. This is Mike Parker with Fish and Game down in Mnemonic.
Welcome. Okay, I'd like to turn it over to the Yukon Area Managers with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Dina, are you online?
Hi, Serena. This is Keith. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Fred. I was going to pass to you anyway.
Hi, this is Fred West, summer season research biologist with Fish and Game. And I think Dina's traveling. So I was going to give the assessment update. And I think then Keith was going to give the management update. But so can you hear me all okay?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Currently the passages of Chinook are below the historical averages, and currently they're unlikely to meet any escapement goals in Alaska or Canada. Summer chum also appears to be below average, but it is too soon to determine if the drainage-wide escapement goal will be met. On to assessment. We've got the LYTF or Lower River Test Fishery, fishing for chum salmon, and they did see a push of fish, last couple of days down at, Middlemouth. So there is some encouraging news that there is a push of fish heading up towards Pilot. But they're still, the average CPUE is still below average. With their, like, this current CPU is 367 compared to a historical cumulative CPU of just under 1,000 at 983. So, yeah, we're still well below average, but there are some fish moving in the river currently. The other thing is we do have some age comp information that we have the scales are in the lab here in Anchorage, and they're in the process of being read. So we'll should have some age comp out by the next update. So just wanted to pass that along. And currently the pilot station sonar, the number that have passed the sonar to date is through the 22nd is 103,260, plus or minus about 14,000 fish, which is below the average, or actually like below the median of 380,000 fish. And for Chinook salmon, we're at 40,754 and plus or minus about 10,000 fish. And which is below the historical cumulative average of about 70,000 fish. So, about half what we see on average. Let's see here. What's the next? The ANVIC sonar, they started, counting on the 16th, and they are currently at 947. Plus or minus 90, and they're below the median of 2,000 fish. And there's an update on the Chinook tagging. The crew made it to camp yesterday, so they're in the process of setting up camp, and they hope to get a net in the water to start the tagging process maybe this evening or tomorrow. So they're in the works of getting going. And there's more information on the weekly update about, if you encounter a tagged fish, but those fish will be above the rapids area where the fish will be tagged. So, but there's more information about where to call and if you come across a tag. That's it for now. So thanks.
Thank you, Fred. We'll move on to Shane with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Hi, Serena. This is Keith Heron. Can you hear me?
I'm sorry. Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. My name is Keith Heron. I'm the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Assistant Salmon Manager for the Yukon, and I'll be providing the management update today for both ADF&G and ourselves. So Chinook and summer chum salmon closures have been announced for all the Yukon fishing districts based on the expected arrival of salmon to the area and the expected low runs this year based on those preseason forecasts. And now we're rolling all gillnet closures up the river, the 2.5 weeks when everyone needs to remove all their 4-inch and smaller gillnets completely from the water. And those have been announced through Subdistrict 4BC, the Galena and Ruby area, and up the Keokuk River. The remaining middle and upper river districts should expect announcements soon for the dates when those 4-inch and smaller gillnets need to be completely removed from the water to protect the Chinook salmon runs. The daily passage numbers at pilot station sonar are encouraging compared to recent years for both Chinook and summer chum salmon. However, these runs are still not fishable. The Chinook run remains unlikely to meet the Alaska or Canada escapement goals, but it would be nice to see an overall run size that is larger than the recent years. So that's a little bit of encouragement. We are watching the summer chum run very closely. We will typically reach the quarter point soon of the summer chum run, and in recent years, that is later this week. And so we'll get more confident in our in-season run projection as the run continues to progress. As Fred said, it is still too early to determine if the drainage-wide escapement goal will be met or not for summer chum, but we will learn more this coming week based on those pilot station counts. And the recent catches of summer chum at the lower Yukon test fishery are also very encouraging, showing higher catch rates in the last few days. And those summer chum salmon should be reaching pilot station soon. So if the run continues to develop well, we could consider selective gear, those dip net opportunities for summer chum salmon. But we need to wait and see how the run develops. And for now, we need to keep harvest closed because we are still below and we don't really know which way how the run will develop. But we'll learn more in the next couple days. And so look forward to see how that develops. And thank you, Fred, for sharing the assessment information. You can find those same numbers in our weekly updates. So please keep an eye out for that. And I'll let you know my phone number now if you have any questions. My phone number is 907-334-5391. I look forward to hearing from anyone and being able to help, but also I look forward to the rest of the call today and any questions that may come up that we could help answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. We'll move on to the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada. Do I have Jacqueline or Adam on the line?
Yeah, hey, Serena. It's Adam Odell here. Jacqueline's away today, so I'll provide this stock assessment update and also an update for the management side. So reminder, I'm the senior fisheries biologist with Fisheries and Oceans Canada and Whitehorse, or a senior fisheries biologist working on stock assessment. It's still pretty early in our season, and it's a bit of a redundant update to the past couple of weeks, but things are progressing. So I'll just touch on that briefly here. So our crews, they have arrived in Old Crow last week to begin mobilization of our sonar camp just downstream of Old Crow on the Porcupine River. Things are going smoothly so far, so I'm hoping next week there should be some updates being able to be provided, maybe in time for the Yurtsa call on Tuesday, but that might be a little bit too soon. But surely the week after that we'll have things up and running and hopefully have some numbers to report on. Similarly, our technicians are heading out to Eagle, Alaska on Thursday to begin the setup on Friday or Saturday with ADF&G staff for the Eagle sonar site. So supporting that program again this year. and allow any Yukon First Nation managers who are online to speak to these projects, but I'm not sure if anyone will be online yet today. Still pretty early, as I said, and for all these other projects as well, but there's a number of assessment projects run by Yukon First Nations in Canada, and these will be starting to come online probably, I would say, next week at the earliest, and then just proceeding the next number of weeks as we move upstream. So I expect the Klondike sonar and the Stewart sonar are probably going to be on in the next week or two, and might have some information to share regarding those projects. And so that's pretty much a wrap on the stock assessment update. Just a quick blurb on environmental conditions. So, I mean, things remain fairly consistent with what we were experiencing last week. Air temperatures and water levels are both pretty well around normal, or pretty much normal across much of the territory. The Yukon River itself at Carmax and also downstream at Dawson is slightly above the typical water level, while further north, the Porcupine River, it's fallen right within its historic range. So a little bit lower compared to what we're seeing down here on the Porcupine River, but I mean, a very dynamic river. And I mean, there is some rain in the forecast this week for sure. It seems like things are going to cool off a little bit as well. So we'll see and continue to monitor water levels in the next week or two as Chinook starts to progress into Canada. So now transitioning here to a management update. There are no changes to the Canadian management actions at this time. We continue to work towards finalization of the 2026 Canadian Management Strategy, which focuses on the 7-year Canadian Origin Yukon River Chinook Salmon Agreement, along with recommendations from the Yukon Salmon Subcommittee, resulting from consultations with Yukon First Nation governments and community members over the course of the last few months. So the low preseason Canadian Origin forecast of approximately 18,000 when we account for expected en route loss was shared at the preseason meetings with Yukon First Nation communities, and in consideration of the very low expected outlook, DFO has closed the wreck fishery, and the current closure in the commercial and domestic fisheries will remain in effect. And lastly, our domestic intergovernmental in-season conference calls, these are starting tomorrow. Our first one will be tomorrow, and then these are bi-weekly throughout the season. They'll be sharing updates and information collected by current assessment programs, as well as receiving feedback and plans on activities of individual First Nation governments for the 2026 season. So that's the update for today. If there's any questions, I'll remain online and glad to help where I can. Thanks.
Thank you, Adam. We will now move into the organizational reports. Do we have anyone from the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission on the line? Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. And if you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to unmute your line. We'll move on to BBAYK.
Hello, Serena.
Yes.
Hi, this is Jim Simon with the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission. Sorry, I was having some technical difficulties. Thank you. I just returned from most of last week out on the river, going in at the Yukon River Bridge and visiting Stevens Village, and then going further upriver to a friend's fish camp. And only thing I really have to share is that there was a lot of drift. We are weaving quite a bit. There was a lot of drift. So, water levels, I can't really speak to because I had not been to that particular location before in the Yukon Flats. But, organizationally, we are, just are in the process of moving into, a new office building. We will be located at 600 3rd Street Fairbanks, Alaska in suite 197. We don't have furniture or a landline yet, but we'll share that information when it becomes available, as well as some of the plans that will be in the works for Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission staff to start traveling to communities within the river. And we'd like to be sure to coordinate that with Serena and your crew, and as well as hopefully visit some of the culture camps, limited educational fishery permit opportunities to help out. And I believe we may have some other staff on the call who are in traveling. So if they don't chime in, then that probably concludes the Fish Commission's report. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jim, for your report. Do we have anyone from the Yukon River Intertribal Watershed Council online? How about Council of Yukon First Nations? Yukon Salmon Subcommittee. Please mute your line if you can. The person that just cleared their throat. Greatly appreciate it. Okay. Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. I'm going to throw it off to Brian McKenna first.
Thanks, Serena. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
All right, thanks. Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Brian McKenna. I'm a fish biologist with the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. Today, I'll be providing an update on our continuing efforts exploring drone-based salmon monitoring efforts. We're hoping and planning on launching a feasibility study next summer in 2027, which would combine traditional knowledge and the use of drone technology to monitor salmon spawning in the Andrewski River. The Andrewski was previously monitored by OWEIR between 1994 and 2025. It was decommissioned last year in 25, and so we're hoping to continue monitoring the Andrewski River using alternative methods. In preparation for our feasibility study, we're actively recruiting and training a local workforce of drone pilots that can help with the project, as well as with other community needs such as search and rescue and community planning, including mapping, flood and breakup monitoring, and erosion mapping. A couple of weeks ago, YRFA sent a couple of staff members along with two recruits from St. Mary's and Pilot Station to participate in a drone training program that was hosted by Nalakuk and Quinnahawk. Quinnahawk has an ongoing partnership with the Alaska Department of Transportation, and together they're leading the efforts to train drone pilots statewide, and they're really pushing the boundaries of drone applications throughout the state, including the use of remote dock stations for autonomous and remote monitoring. The training program was focused on the Skydio X10 drone platform. Skydio is a U.S. government-approved manufacturer, so that drone can be used statewide across varying land ownership, such as state and federal ownership. The training program was a mix of classroom-style learning. It also included a lot of hands-on learning in the field and upriver. It was a really great program, enjoyed by everyone there, super educational. Everyone completed the training and received a Skydio certification. And the next steps, kind of moving forward, we're going to be providing an FAA Part 107 training, and this is to get our local pilot network their FAA drone license. And then once the pilots receive their FAA drone license, they are eligible to receive the Skydio X10 drone platform for use in their communities. We're currently looking into funding right now to be able to facilitate the Part 107 training. We're hoping to be able to do this later this summer in either Bethel or Anchorage. And we're planning on also heading back to Quinnahawk to team up with the team there to do some additional drone training specifically focused on salmon monitoring. That's pretty much it for the update. If anyone on this call is interested or knows folks that are interested, please feel free to have them reach out to Serena or myself. And, yeah, I'll stop there and take any questions if there are any.
Great. Thank you, Brian. We are going to be starting our educational exchange. We have 5 Canadian representatives flying into Anchorage as we speak, and we will be flying to Emonik tomorrow. We'll be learning about the projects there, along with having a community potluck and visiting with local some local fishers. We will then make our way to a fish camp along the Yukon River between Emonik and St. Mary's, and stopping in St. Mary's and also visiting local fishers there and making our way to pilot station for the final days and visit the pilot station sonar. So if you're in those communities, look out for us, stop by and say hi, meet our guests from Canada, and we hope to have a really good trip and conversation with everyone. We will now move into our community reports. I'll be calling by district. Please ask any questions you may have to any of management or the organizations online. We'll start with the coastal communities of Chivac, Hooper Bay, and Scammon Bay. Just a reminder to press *6 to unmute your line. Again, calling on the communities of Chivac, Hooper Bay, and Scammon Bay. We'll move on to District Y1. Do we have anyone from Nunam, Lagunak, Emonik, or Kotick on the line? Again, calling on District Y1, Nunam, Lagunak, Emonik, or Kotlik.
Hey, Serena.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, this is John Rizzi from Y1. Lagunak from Emonik. Anyways, I've been hearing a lot regarding the water levels and the wood and the salmon going up the river, and people, you know, identifying quite a bit. There are a couple of notes I have here. There's a gentleman from Marshall and a lady from Mountain Village that were curious. They wanted to know if the Alaska Department of Fish and Game can put how they count the fish at the Dixon Sonar and Pilot Station as a short, like a abstract on the KNOM, KICY, and KYUK radio regarding They heard when they asked, there was only 4 15-minute samples taken in a 24-hour period. That, you know, my knowledge, that would be for the test fishing, or 4 20-minute samples in a 24-hour period. But I told them I'm not really sure if they run the sonar for 24 hours a day and do the counting that way, or do they just do sample. They wanted clarification on it because they were seeing salmon finning, salmon jumping into Yukon, and they're not being counted for some reason, or they feel that the Department of Fish and Game is hiding something from the users or the stakeholders on the river. But anyways, that was the concern from the two upriver people. The low river people, they all seem to be doing okay with their 4-inch nets harvesting their dead salmon. So, okay, that's all I have. Thank you, Serena.
Thank you, John, for your question and relaying those concerns and comments from other people. Just encourage that you have them call in with their questions. That would be great to have them listen in and get more feedback from the conversations we do have. I'm going to throw that out to management if there's a way way we can get there. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I think they're all busy, but, you know, they have time, like, in the evenings to text or send a message. But, yes, absolutely, and that's why I tell them, get a hold of the Department of Fish and Game. They said they've tried, they've left messages, and no calls back, and, you know, but I tell them, keep trying, you know. If nothing else, they can call me and I can relay a message. But other than that, I think that would be yeah, that's what I encourage them to do. You know, I'm not out there. I can't physically see what's going on in the river. I can only go on, you know, what I've heard, and sometimes it may not be accurate. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, John. Also, these calls are recorded, and we do post them on our website and share them on Facebook, so they can always listen in when they have time available.
Hi, Serena. This is Mike Parker down in the Monarch. I think I can address some of the pilot station question.
Yes, go ahead.
Pilot station samples 3 times a day for about 3 to 3.5 hours each shift, and then in between those shifts is when they operate their test fishery. So although the sonar is not on 24 hours, they cannot be fishing in front of it, or it wouldn't be an accurate count. And as far as calling the office here, we are open Monday through Friday from 8 to 5, and we will do our best to call back if anyone leaves a message. Thank you.
Yes, Serena, this is Holly Carroll at Fish and Wildlife. I'd love to jump in as well on this one.
Yes, go ahead.
I really appreciate, John, you sharing some of those concerns. You know, there's a lot of myth-busting that we have to do sometimes, or some rumor mills, and just a lot of lack of faith around our, you know, black box research, as it were, you know. And it is kind of tough, because if they're not going to tune into these calls, or they don't get a hold of a Fish and Game person, or they can't visit the site, they may not believe what we're doing. And so one thing I would ask, John, specifically for you to do, because it sounds like these folks trust you, especially as a panel member and someone who sees our data, you know, year after year at all of the meetings, you know, we have complete confidence in the current sonar. We haven't had operational issues. We haven't missed large days of count. The project is operating as normal. And, yes, people are seeing salmon come in the river. We've got really good test fish catches for summer chum. That's promising. We've got pretty high daily passage rate for Chinook. We are not undercounting the salmon, and that's why we're closed. You know, there is no biologist working on the river that feels that that's occurring. So if there's any way that you could just maybe convey that to them, and then, yeah, have them call the Fish and Game office at 949-1320. Or, you know, I mean, we can try to do sort of PSAs on the radio about how the sonar works, but we sure are putting out daily numbers. We're putting a lot of effort into sending out daily updates with the numbers, with how the numbers compare to the past. A daily update was just published today, and it will go to every single village and tribe. And so the village, the folks that are living in those villages should go to the tribe or their city and see if someone's receiving those emails and share them around and hang them up. Yeah, that's just a suggestion I have. So, John, if you could help to relay that directly to those folks, maybe that would help. And also, if they want to call me, feel free to give them my number. I know you have that, and I can explain how the sonar works if they've got some issues with the methodology.
Serena, thank you, Holly. I'll do that. Thank you. And they all know the 1320 number down there. So, okay, I'll continue to share that information. Thank you so much, Holly.
We will continue with District Y2. Do we have anyone from Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's Pilot Station, or Marshall on the line? Again, calling on District Y2.
Hi, Serena. This is Marvin.
Hi, Marvin. Go ahead.
Hi. I forgot all about the ear claws. I have a bundle with my granddaughters here. There were signs of lots of fish coming in for how many days on the North Mouse and Middle Mouse. Just by watching the low-level fog that was present, even though the temperatures were well above 50 and 60 degrees, it's our knowledge that we've gained over the years of watching nature. Some people were going as far as Point Romanoff and probably beyond to go get subsistence salmon up there where it's open. Haven't heard of any 4-inch gillnets in the other rivers that where there's no salmon. So. And just normal water levels when we have tides, they're 4 to 5 feet high. And the water tidal lows are about probably -1 to 0 due to lack of rain and not much water flowing. So that's about it.
Thank you, Marvin.
You're welcome.
Calling on District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's Pilot Stationer Marshall.
Hey, Serena.
Hi, Anita. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Anita from Mountain Village. I spoke to a couple of fishermen this past week and they didn't fish. The water's so high but dropped since the ice moved out. There's no drift in the river. And it's been a cold spring this year and the weather's finally warmed up in the past how many days. So that's about it.
Great. Thank you, Nita. Last call for District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, and St. Mary's Pilot Station in Marshall. We'll move on to District Y3, Russian Mission, Holy Cross, and Shagluk.
Hello?
Hi, Lisa.
Hey. Hey, guys, can you hear me? Okay.
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
All right, this is Basil at Russian Mission, first stop in Y3. Our water is dropping steady. We've been having thunder and lightning storms this past week. There was a little fire that started up on our big mountain up here, kind of like, well, during the summer, Keiko has a Bible camp, and they invite kids through age groups from little, you know, out of Pampers to big kids, the high school kids. And a couple years ago, the same thing happened. They had to stop their camp. But this year, the fire that started in the same spot that stopped their camp a couple years ago, it seemed to turn off. But there's little to no drift on the river. I went boat riding. Me and my family went boat riding way in the slough right below us. You could get to what we call Tramway, which is halfway between here and Kalskag. We went up that one, and starting from about, I don't know, about an hour into the slough, we start seeing big logs with the stumps. Not only little drift and trash, what we call, you know, trash for nuts, but there are some big logs, big wood, big everything. That just goes to show how high the water went. Not all, but a lot of logs are up in those sloughs and plugging up traditional berry picking spots out that ways. But there's little to no drift in the river. There's little to no fishing. There's like no sense of urgency to rebuild fish camps that were destroyed by the flood this year, because we just had a flood a few years ago. And a few of us were able to rebuild our camps just for traditional practices and stuff, you know. But this year, that's not the case this year. There's a lot of people turning their heads and just with the thought that there's going to be not much fishing opportunity, and there's no, you know, no urgency to rebuild that. So there's, like always, it's starting to get harder to get participation for this, just because all the new rules and regulations that get poured on us. I keep telling people that, you know, it's better if they call in themselves with their own opinions instead of just coming through me. But they all, basically, a lot of them, the general comments and stuff that I get, they're all directed toward where the salmon spend 80% of their life, which is out at sea. We all know that we're doing our part. We're doing as much as we could to get these salmon by. There's a lot of people with dip nets and four-inch nets that we're just not even trying, seems like. Rod and reeling has been the main source of fresh food for us. Like my boys will go out and they'll come home with a tree fish or a couple of white fish, or, you know, just table food. Not, they don't get enough to start cutting and drying and, you know, the whole operation at fish camp. So that's the only fishing that's going on. There's, and then back to the general consensus about the questions is, you know, I said this the last couple of times, that Google is a powerful tool. A lot of people are starting to get on the same page here and starting to wonder why there's no protection out for the salmon where they spend 80% of their life. Only what's left from the gauntlet of nets, we let pass. So that's starting to get pretty frustrating, and it's starting to get under people's nerves. And we know it's the managers got a boss. We know they have to do their job. We're not putting them on the hot seat. We're not saying it's their fault. It's just the system. We have full trust in the system, and the system seems to be broken, at least for subsistence users. And another thing that keeps getting brought up is when bycatch numbers meet or exceed the numbers entering into the river, management should be adjusting to that, not just pouring more rules and regulations on us. But I do encourage people to call. I do encourage them to get a hold of the managers and voice their concerns, their self, but a lot of people choose to remain anonymous and just come through me. So it does hurt quite a bit when the older people, you know, come up with these questions and comments, and then a lot of the younger group, like my boy is born in the 2000s, 2005. He just yesterday he was pretty. He went to fish camp, and if the grass is tall and there's no, it's not set up to operate like it usually is. So and that saddens him, and he came to me and he asked me why are we not filling up the fish camp like we usually do? And it kind of, you know, when you're trying to explain something this complex to a younger generation, that he never did see the fish camp filled with orange like I did, like, you know, kids in the 80s and older. We know what it's like to live in camp and eat salmon every day. But he just got a taste of it, you know, when we were able to fish chums, and then we kind of geared into whitefish, pike, cheefish, that type of thing, just to keep the tradition alive. And this year, even he's going to be 21 years old, it was a little bit hard to explain to him what the heck's going on and why we can't fish. And that hurts just as much as the older people coming to me and telling me we're not the problem, that the problem should be addressed and taken care of. So, but I'm not saying we're not saying it's the current manager's fault. We're saying the system's broken. So, and we get all the heat for that anyways. So there was a couple of little fires that or they turned off since, but we had a lightning storm, and that kind of got some feathers ruffled a little bit, but after it calmed down and quit, we had some rain since then, so there's all those smoke spots stopped. And there's a few families that moved over to the Kuskokwim and down to Bristol Bay for the fishing opportunities. They have families down there. And I guarantee you, if we all had families over on the Kuskokwim or Bristol Bay or wherever they could fish, then we would all be out there fishing. Especially, you know, with the price of food gone up, the gas here is $9.75 a gallon after the new barge came. Further expanding our reliance on subsistence opportunities for just for table food, seems like, and there's no food to, you know, the food security situation is kind of at an all-time high, especially with the price of food, price of gas, price of equipment, and everybody's worried that we're going to lose a generation or traditional practice with this generation that's coming right now. But, like, you know, there was a boy that went missing back in January, and everybody that goes on boat rides, like we went on a family boat ride when I saw those woods, and everything that we saw in the trees that was not a natural color, we saw red, we stopped, it was an old life jacket. We saw blue, we stopped, it was a tote. We saw, you know, anything, any color, kind of discoloration that's in the trees or out in the wilderness, we all inspect it, because the loss of that boy affected us heavily, and it's still affecting us. So little things like that, they're adding up, they add up, you know, the no fishing, the disappearance of that boy, the flood, you know, no fishing opportunities, the destroyed camps, the questions from the older folks, the questions from the younger folks, it's all adding up, and it's starting to get a little too much to bear. But We did see a lot of dead moose. A lot of them weren't even eaten. Nothing, their guts were bloated and no animal went around them. So they looked pretty unhealthy, like they were starving. And the worst one was the cow and a calf. And the calf was barely alive, and that hurt seeing that. You know, the mom was dead and hungry and uneaten, and the baby was just there. We didn't have a gun to dispatch, but we felt for it. Also, we noticed that there's not much places for the migratory birds to have their nests and lay their eggs, which is a pretty common traditional practice. That's usually in our diet. No muskrats. The beavers are moving out of the creeks and into the more protected ponds where no boats can go. So for us mushers, that's not a good sign. We usually this time, especially since there's been no fishing, we've been having to mix in a lot of beaver with our pike and whatever else we could scrounge up for our dogs. So that's affecting us. And then also we noticed that the bears are a lot more aggressive. Usually we see them up in these spawning streams, and we kind of coexist with them when we go rod and reel. They won't bother us, we won't bother them. We'll see them, you know, we'll see each other. And then but nowadays, with no salmon in the river, like hunting antlers or, you know, searching for antlers is a common practice here. A lot of kids go out, look for antlers, and sell them to the antler buyers, and that's a pretty popular pastime here. But there's been quite a few kids that told me that they were even they were in a group, not walking individually. They were kind of in a line, like how we chase rabbits, walking in a line, talking. Boom! Came into a little opening, and a bear started coming at them. Of course, they're all carrying only 22s, you know, that's what we usually carry just to make noise or for protection. But they got all bundled up together, and they started firing their guns, not at it, but toward it. And it didn't even run away. It just stopped, stood up. And when it got down, it swiped at the ground and looked pretty pissed off at them. So they walked backwards. And that's not an isolated case. There's been moose hunters that get attacked by bears, you know, berry pickers that get attacked by bears. So basically what I'm saying is just, we see the ripple effect of no salmon through bears and other predators that rely on these salmon just like us. So the bears now are claiming all the country out there, not only the streams. So we noticed that they're extra aggressive. They're going after anything that moves. And that affects that affects the way we usually utilize, like, antlers, berries, and moose, and, you know, utilize the land. They're taking the claim, and they tell us it's theirs from now on. So that's very common nowadays. There's been a fox, a rabid fox, running around town. Not the first one this year. I don't know if it's from the flood or it can't be from the flood, but the flood certainly did take away a lot of its mouse. You know, a lot of them live off mice, and after the flood, we noticed the change in difference that in the wolves, or the foxes, not only the bears. So we're starting to notice a lot of things changing. Getting pretty worried, food security, coexisting with the other predators. Gathering wood is another thing, too. I know we live in the timber, and we could keep our houses warm off timber, but driftwood was always we used that for building supplies, like building our fish camps, building, you know, anything that needs raw lumber, we use driftwood. So we're affected by that too. There's also a lot, like John Lamont was saying, there's some questions about the sonar is kind of getting old. I don't want to say outdated, but, you know, it at least gives the managers an idea of what's swimming out there. So the accuracy of this practice is coming into question, along with because that's the only tool, basically the only tool you guys, the managers have to see what kind of fish is, or how many fish is out there and what's passing and all kinds of stuff. So, but yeah, there's a lot of wood way up in sloughs. At least our ride into the slough, we started running into big stumps, big trees, big logs way in there where they usually aren't. So, and there's a lot of sloughs that are plugged off from drift trash and everything like that. And that's affecting our other subsistence activities too. So, but yeah, that's the general consensus from everybody that is around, that in my area anyways, they're starting to question the system. We have full faith in the system, but they're starting to feel that the system is broken and it's not bringing these fish back to historical numbers like we were fed for years. So, it's just not a good vibe this year with the everything that's going on here. Not many people are even trying to fish, but the few kids that are, they're just for table food. So, but yeah, that's just about it for us, and thank you.
Thank you, Basil, for your information and observations. I'll do a last call for District Y3, Rishimushin, Holy Cross, and Shagluk.
Hey, Sharon, I just Wesley from Rush Mission.
Hi, Wesley, go ahead.
Yeah, I just got a few comments on, with all these closures with subsistence with 4-inch, we don't have any other opportunities to go out and get non-salmon species with closures, with all these closures, and it's pretty hard for people to go out and use dip nets because the price of our gas is almost $10 a gallon now. And by the time you get enough fish by dip netting, you're out of gas and you don't have enough to put away. So it's kind of hard. And like what Basil was talking about, the sloughs are plugged up with wood, and where we usually go set our nets to get chiefish or the whitefish and pikes. So that's going to be kind of tough year this year. And another thing is, my question was to Fish and Game, the sonar down in Pilot, is there any word on getting that updated? I know it's been there for quite a long time. I haven't heard anything. I know I heard people talk about in the past if there's anything or in the future that if it'll be updated. And I read of a lot of whales, too, are getting beached or finding a lot of dead whales out in the ocean. We all know that their food is getting taken away by all the trawlers out there, all the salmon food that they eat, whales, the krill. And I just read about the salmon's main food was the small little, I don't know what you call those, fry or the pollock when they're small. I know I read about that. They kill us quite a bit of that. So that's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you, Wesley. To answer his question, do we have anyone from EDF&G or U.S. Fish and Wildlife?
Hi, Serena. This is Keith. I can answer part of his question and more speaking to the devastating opportunity and the restrictions on 4-inch gear. That's one thing that's really not easy for us managers to do, is restrict the 4-inch gear because we know it's important for non-salmon. We did think it was really important to protect the low Chinook salmon runs and try to get as many fish up to their spawning grounds as possible. This 4-inch restrictions have kind of been around for a few years now. But one thing I'd say I think is encouraging to see that we potentially could have a an okay escapement, a higher escapement than the last couple years. So we'd like to see those fish be able to get to their spawning grounds and spawn. So we think that those closures are very important to protect the bulk of the Chinook salmon run. And then the follow-up, we are going to offer those 6-inch opportunities for non-salmon in those non-salmon areas. You might remember last fall we did a similar thing. So that's one thing to look forward to during the fall season when you start getting those bigger sheepfish in those areas that was asked for by local people. And that is one thing we're going to be doing again this fall season. So hopefully losing a couple weeks of summer season whitefish, but an increased, a better opportunity for those larger whitefish with a larger gear helps offset some of those hardships. And so I just wanted to acknowledge that that is not easy for us managers to make those decisions, but we do think they're necessary to help bring back these fish for future generations. And then I'll pass it to anyone from ADFNG if they have follow-up for the sonar and getting more information to communities.
Hi, Serena. This is Carl Pfister. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Carl.
Hi. So my name is Carl Pfister. I'm with Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and I oversee the sonar projects on the Yukon. And I heard a couple questions. One, I want to say, you know, Mike and Holly did a great job answering the questions that John had. And I heard a couple questions about updating the project. I just want to let people know, you know, the project, we are continually evaluating the project, not both in terms of both the equipment that's used and in terms of methodology that's used. So it's not a static thing. We have updated, right now we're using the best equipment we have to do the job that we're doing at the site. We have upgraded from Ditson to the Aris, which is kind of the next iteration, the next generation of the Ditson. And so as new technologies come on board, we are trying to adopt the best possible technology at the time. We are still using split beam as well because the river is so wide, you can't sonify. You can only get about 50, 60 meters or so with the Ditson or an Aris, and with the split beam, we can look out 300 meters per side. So we do a combination of both in order to get the best possible estimate for the site. The other thing we're always evaluating, too, is our apportionment methodology. We're using drift gill nets, and it's still the best way we've found to apportion our estimates to species. We do have a website online. Unfortunately, the URL is kind of complicated. It's not a nice, easy URL to speak to, but I have provided that to Serena. I thought maybe it would be something they could post somewhere, but we've got a pretty good site that kind of describes some of the technologies and the methodologies we use at the various projects throughout the state, and people might find that interesting. I think that's all I have for the moment, unless there are any more specific questions.
This is Washley. Thanks for answering those. So I just had a comment on the lady that was talking about opening up the 6-inch for fall in the sloughs, non-salmon areas. You know, I just want to say that it's pretty hard for us to dry fish during the fall season because of the rain, cold, and wet. You know, we try to get our fish during the summer warm, dry season because they dry fast. And with the cold weather, fall cold weather, they get damp, they get moldy, they get wet, and a lot of them spoil when you try to keep your fire going in your smokehouse. That's just a comment I wanted to bring up on that. Thank you.
Okay, last call for District Y3, Rishinushin, Holy Cross, and Shadlock. We'll Move on to District I-4A, Anvik, Grayling, Caltag, Nalato, and Koyukuk. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. Again, calling on District Y4E, Anvik, Grayling, Caltag, Nalato, Koyukuk. Moving up the Koyukuk River, we got Huslia, Hughes, Alakakit, Alatna, and Bettles. Again, calling on the communities on the Koyukuk River, Huslia, Hughes, Alakakit, Alatna, and Bettles. Again, just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute your line. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to unmute. We'll move into District Y4NC, Galena and Ruby. Move into District Y5B, Tana, Ten Rapids, Rampart, and Yukon River Bridge.
Serena, this is Lieutenant Dan Valentine with the Alaska Wildlife Troopers. Can you hear me?
Hi, Dan. Just go ahead.
Hey, just a quick note that something the wildlife troopers have ran into in the Galena area here in the last couple days is that people aren't recording their salmon that they're catching on their funerary and memorial harvest permits, and we would really appreciate that if they can do that, that'll make our job and their lives a whole lot easier.
Great, thank you. Again, calling on District Y5A and B, Tana, Ten Rapids, Rampart, and Yukon River Bridge. We'll move into District Y5C&D, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Fort Yukon, Chalkeetsik, Vinitai, Arctic Village, Circle, and Eagle.
Hey, Serena, this is Matthew from your development report for Tan, and I was waiting to see if Stan was on. He can't be on, so I have a report from him in Tanana. The water level at Rapids in Tanana is somewhat high, with some drift the last few days, but less at present. Report from traveling from the Yukon River Bridge by Stevens Village to Rapids yesterday was of only one fishnet in the river and none seen from Rapids to Tanana. Only one camp from Rapids to Tanana had a boat at it, and that was mine. Pretty sad. Does not sound like much will change from talking to people about their summer plans. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Matthew, for providing that report for Stan. We will continue with District Y5C&D, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Fort Yukon, Chalkeetsik, Vinitai, Arctic Village, Circle, and Eagle.
Hi, Serena. This is Carlissa.
Hi, Carlissa. Go ahead.
I don't have much to report, just a few two fishermen that were fishing with net for whitefish. They've been sharing with family and friends. We've been having good weather, hot waters, high. I've been getting the word out of to get more people involved and calling in and getting people to survey for next week. And if anyone in Fort Yukon are listening, please give me a call. Thank you.
Thank you, Felisa. Last call for District Y5, C and D, Stevens Village, Birch Creek, Beaver, Fort Yukon, Chilkeetsik, Vinitai, Arctic Village, Circle, and Eagle. Okay, we'll move into District Y6, Manly, Minto, Nanana, and Fairbanks. Again, calling on District Y6, Manly, Minto, Nanana, and Fairbanks. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute your line.
Okay, this is Virgil.
Hi, in Virgil. Go ahead.
Okay. We've been having hot weather here. I think it was 84 yesterday, and thunderstorms. Anyway, I want to give a report on what I am sketching of our fish. As of yesterday, we caught 406,339 chums. And on kings, they have to be pitching them overboard because they only, as of yesterday, caught 976 sheet kings so far. And they were reporting that they catch the majority of them, almost all of them, were caught in South Unimak, when the historical average is that where they catch the heck out of the kings, and in June they're not feeding kings, they're migrating kings. They're 66% larger than the ones they catch in the post-June fishery. But anyway, they caught less than 100 of them in the Shumagans, and where they really catch them a lot is, I can't think of the stat area. Anyway, it's a stat area right there by Sand Point. And so I have a feeling, because they know we're really after them on the kings, is that they're pitching the kings overboard. And that board member that voted for them to be able to pitch the kings overboard, although it's not in effect this year, it'll be in effect next year, unless we get something done about it, he will be off the board at the end of this month. He's the one that went goose hunting the last 2 years with the former manager of the Canary Inn. Anyway, that's what I have to report. And so in that management plan that they're operating on right now, if they, when they get to 450,000, which they probably will do that today, unless they're pitching them overboard again or not counting them, then they'll hit that 450,000 and get restricted. Won't be able to fish as many hours. But that's what I have to report. Thank you.
Thank you, Virgil. And just for everyone's we're going to have Matthew with, who's the area manager for Area M, provide an update during next week's call.
Victor here.
Hi, Victor. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, everybody. Good reports. I've got Taylor and John's, and
Basil, and the other guys, I didn't get his name, but they had some good reports. It's kind of spooky, though. What happened to the fish cap? Lonelier and lonelier. Hope this conference ain't taking the same trend. But anyway, maybe we have to, people that we're fighting for, we got to let them know that we're so focused in the Area M and that bycatch has not lost from our thoughts, that we're still trying to get through to them. But what hurts me the most is the governor, the leader of the state of Alaska, is definitely for jobs and exploit, I guess, of the king salmon and chum salmon, no matter what the cost. And these, all these biologists and stuff that are working for them probably have to think twice before they differ with them. They want to keep their jobs. So plenty, I bring this up before the Area M guy going to talk. But Virgil is focused. We have to let them know that we're still got the fight left in us. We're not going to just roll over. And anyway, that's the most negative I've ever been in a while. But hopefully, they'll be reporting back there next week or so and get a little better stroke. So thank you, guys, and it was a pleasure talking to you, Serena. Over.
Great. Thank you, Victor. Always good to hear you. Anyone else from District Y6, Manly, Minton, and Anna and Fairbanks? Okay, we'll move into Canada. Do we have anyone from Old Crow, Dawson, Whitehorse, Mayo, Pelly Crossing, CarMax, or Teslin on the line? Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. Again, calling anyone from Canada, Old Crow, Dawson, Whitehorse, Mayo, Pelly Crossing, CarMax, or Teslin. Hearing none, we'll go ahead and open up the floor for any additional questions or comments at this time. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute, and if you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to unmute.
Serena, this is Jude Hensler.
Hi, Jude. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was the last call last year. Ken Chase was on. And he suggested, and I thought there would be some follow-through on that, that we get some kind of a report on weekly on what's going on the Kuskokwim, sort of like a neighboring river system. And I haven't heard anything that the first call this year, and this is only the second time I've been on, but nobody talked about the Kuskokwim. I'd hope they would. I've got some information that I'd like to give everybody, but maybe they already know it. That's just what I found out. The Kuskokwim River, Ken reported that he heard that there was fishing going on the Kuskokwim as contrasted with the Yukon. I don't know if there was fishing going on. It sounds like, from what I've read, sounds like there was some fishing. But the interesting thing about the Custaquim, if I'm reporting it correctly, and Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife, or anyone is welcome to tell me I'm wrong. I'd be glad to hear it. But anyway, on the Custaquim, for the last 12 years, they've been meeting their escapement goals, which is a lot different than on the Yukon. I don't know that there's any more Chinook in the Custaquim because of that, but it's curious that there wouldn't be. I don't know. And then there's another river, the Karluk River on Kodiak Island, that is sort of a sports fisherman's river, used to be good for Chinook, but for the last almost 20 years now, they've got no Chinook. They did the same things we're doing, stopped all fishing, basically. But the escapement last year was 76, actually that was 24, it was 76, and the escapement, and that's the individuals, and the escapement on the Karluk River was 93. There's a nearby river, the Iyakaluk, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, that has approximately the same situation. And I don't know if anybody from Fish and Game wants to comment on any of that, because I could be dead wrong about the whole thing. And then there, the NOAA, according to what I've read, has decided that the Chinook are not a species of interest, of concern. That's intermixing state language with federal language, which I can do, but because I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. And it turns out our near neighbors to the east, Canada, their scientists don't agree with it at all. And I can assure you that the governments in Fort Yukon and Old Crow, I was in attendance at a Gwich'in meeting 4 years ago at Old Crow, and as they said, the system is not working for us. And that's where the salmon go to spawn in those areas. And then the last thing I want to comment on is that in 2015, the one time that escapement was met that I know of in recent years, 84,000, 85,000, somewhere in that neighborhood, made it to the Sonar in Eagle. But I don't know, and maybe nobody knows, if any of those 85,000, 84,000 made it to the spawning ground in Canada. I'd like to hear what somebody tells me about that. And then that's really about all I've got to say. The other thing is, at that meeting in Old Crow, there was an attendance, a woman from Tiksik, which is former village name was Arctic Red River. It's on the Mackenzie River. And what I do know is that forever there's been a salmon run, I think it's almost all chum salmon, to the Mackenzie River system. And they've dodged ice and all the things that go on. But before my time, which was 70 years of experience with the rivers, there was a salmon run on the Mackenzie. And the woman, a woman from the Chick-Chick village, said that not only are they getting chum salmon now, but other species that they're not familiar with. That's a four-year-old report. I don't know, maybe Canada's got some idea of what's going on. And anyway, I'm done. And Virgil, what do you think of that NOAA situation? If you're there. Virgil? Okay.
While we're waiting for Virgil, Jude, the Custaquim, they do have their own weekly riverwide teleconferences, and you could find their information at cuscosalmon.org. That's cuscosalmon.org. And they also, very similar to ours, they also provide their teleconference summaries online. But again, that's every Tuesday at 10 a.m. is the Cusco teleconference calls.
Okay, this is Virgil. Well, I'm back on. Something I left off when I spoke earlier is that there's a group of Canadians that are doing a film on salmon on the Yukon River. They interviewed me for 6 hours on Friday, and then they interviewed Charlie Wright and Eva yesterday or day before, I think, Sunday for about 6 hours, too. So, and they're supposed to be flying over to Amani about now, I'm not sure. But I think they're going to be on the, maybe Serena knows this, but some of them, I think, or maybe all of them, are going to be on the culture camp thing, you know, where we, the exchange student, exchange program that we have. Anyway, I don't know if it's them doing it or not. That's what they're doing or not. But then they're going to go to Tanana and Manly as well, and maybe go up the river from Tanana to Rampart, and then on up to the bridge. Because they have people they want to talk to in Tanana. Well, they want to talk to Stansaray in Tanana. And then, but anyway, they're doing this thing. If it gets out so that a lot of people can see it, I think that might make a big difference. But as far as what Jude said about Koyak, that's a horrible situation. But some of the rivers in Cook Inlet are in the same shape, where they're down to less than 100 king salmon, and they used to have maybe 4,000 or 5,000, and now they're down to less than 100. And that's the situation on the Karluk River over in Kodiak and Iakulik, both those rivers in that situation. But they've got seiners right outside there, seining. And so it's no wonder that they're like that. But we shouldn't be like that here, but we are, not quite as bad as them, but we're in pretty damn bad shape. And maybe if we get the right publicity, because the only thing that's going to help is shut down the worthless damn hatcheries. We don't need that blue-collar welfare system the state's got. And so that's the question. And I asked one of those people running for governor when he was here talking, I asked him if he had the moral courage to shut them down. And he, of course, didn't want to answer that question. But we need someone that has the moral courage, the backbone, whatever the hell you want to call it, to just shut them down. I'm done. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Virgil. Yes, there is a film crew that will be traveling with the Educational Exchange. It's the Last Run Films. They're doing co-production with a Yukon-based company with the National Film Board of Canada. And they'll be traveling to Imanac. They're meeting us there tomorrow. And then we'll be going up to St. Mary's as well, and they'll be interviewing local people. That's with David Curtis and Jackie Olson. And the film's going to be titled The Last Run, Saving Our Salmon. We can have them get on this teleconference call to answer any questions as well.
Serena?
Yes, go ahead.
Did I make any mistakes in when I was reporting or thought I was reporting, as far as we know?
Reporting as to?
Well, that the Kuskokwim, they met their last 12 years, they met their escapement goal, that sort of thing.
I do apologize, but I rarely keep updates on the Kuskokwim because I'm more focused on the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. We do partner and talk with our neighboring rivers, Kuskokwim.
What are the state biologists that are on say? Do they know anything about the Kuskokwim?
Serena, I can hop on here.
Okay, there's a
Let the Fish Commission handle it, please.
Serena, this is Zach Lillard with Fishing Game. I can help out if you'd like.
Oh, yes, please. Thank you.
And then I think somebody else offered some backup support if I don't address the question the way that folks are looking for. This is Zach Fuller with Alaska Department of Fish and Game, AYK Regional Research Coordinator. Yeah, the Kuskokwim runs have been below average for the last decade and a bit, but there has been returns on an annual basis large enough to support limited subsistence opportunity and achieve the drainage wide escapement goal. The drainage wide escapement goal for the Kuskokwim Chinook run is 65,000 to 120,000. I believe I'd have to look back at records, but I believe that escapement goal has been met annually since 2014 or at least 2015. It's a complicated management system on the Kuskokwim. The portion of the drainage that falls within the federal refuge is being managed by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Kuskokwim Intertribal Fish Commission. They have been providing opportunities for limited subsistence harvest for federally qualified users, and then the portion of the drainage upstream from Aniak is actively managed by State of Alaska, and currently there is opportunity for limited subsistence harvest in that portion of the drainage with gear size restrictions. But maybe I'll pause there.
Serena?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, Serena. This is Jim Simon with the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission and formerly associated with the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission for a number of years. And yeah, everything that Zach provided is great. I think the only thing I would add on to that is that from at least 2015 through 2023, the escapement on the Kuskokwim, the drainage wide Chinook goal, has been at the above the midpoint, because the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission in-season managers really want to ensure that they're compensating for smaller fish size, declined quality of escapement, and so that's why they are shooting for the towards the upper end of this. Of the drainage-wide goal, but they are also quick to point out that despite, the past 10 years at least of meeting the escapement goal above the midpoint, there are some tributary goals that have been missed, and which is concerning, of course, because they are focused on conserving the genetic stock diversity of their salmon populations. To be to support more climate resilient fisheries, because some low producing stocks under some environmental conditions may become the higher producing stocks in the future based on some academic research results. And comparatively during that same time period where the Kuskokwim met the goal for 100% of in recent years, statewide, Chinook escapement goals have only been, the lower end has only been achieved 41% of the time, 50.2, I believe, percent of the time not met at all, and only 8% of the time actually over escaping, having escapements above the escapement goals. So what I think that speaks to is just this is really a statewide phenomenon, of low Chinook salmon production. And it will be very interesting to see, if the Kuskokwim Chinook returns actually begin to rebound as the environmental conditions seem to be really keeping Chinook production low, given that they have been meeting their escapement goals. Of course, on the Yukon, it's very concerning because escapement goals haven't been met for quite some time, and the focus only on the drainage-wide goal is quite concerning when it comes to summer chum, et cetera, because we're looking at our future opportunities. With that, I also, this is my first call on as a staff member for the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission, and I missed the first call because I was actually at the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, where they provided the preliminary genetic data from the 2024 and 2025 Chinook salmon bycatch from the Eastern Bering Sea pollock trawl fishery. And I wasn't sure if that information has already been shared with the YIRTFA teleconference participants, but if not, I could speak very briefly to that also, Sarita.
Yes, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, okay. We at the Fish Commission are in the process of developing sort of a summary outreach material that we'll be happy to share with Sarita once we get that finalized. But in general, we have some new reporting groups of the genetic stream of origin data that the department has developed at their gene conservation lab, some great Department of Fish and Game staff working there. And so they've been able to break out Kuskokwim Chinook, which are lumped with Bristol Bay Chinook. They still can't distinguish between them. But if you look at Kuskokwim and Bristol Bay Chinook, as well as the two reporting groups that have been reported so far in this preliminary results, if you look at all of those together, in 2024, the Eastern Bering Sea pollock bycatch of Chinook salmon was 50%. Those groups, Yukon, Kuskokwim, and Bristol Bay, and last summer it was 70% or 71%. So that was factored a lot into Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission's testimonies at the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council earlier this month in Vancouver, Washington. And we were also working with the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission and a variety of allies, Ocean Conservancy, et cetera, Salmon State, to be able to address the pelagic midwater trawl gear now that we know that that operates on the ground pretty often. And we were really promoting, the Fish Commission itself was really promoting trying to look at the health and numbers of Yukon River Chinook and Chum bycatch in that fishery to be considered ecosystem indicators when the council is setting their allowable biological catch. We were told it was inappropriate at that stage of the harvest control rules, and that that is more for directly with the council in determining what the total allowable catch would be. So that was quite frustrating. The motions ignored many of our organizations, including the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission's concerns about protecting the food web in the ocean because of, you know, what we're seeing with seabirds, et cetera. Many of you on the coast know what I'm talking about. And there was no mention of habitat in any of the council's actions. Very concerning given that when our Yukon River Chinook salmon enter the marine waters and as smolt, and those first several years of their life in the near shore environment, you know, they eventually, as they grow up, you know, depend on eating fish that depend on the things in that benthic habitat that are being impacted by bottom contact. So what we learned, many of us were just simply referred to as stupid or ignorant for not realizing that in 1993, when the pelagic trawl requirement, so midwater trawl requirement, was put into federal regulations by the council, they changed what the definition of pelagic meant, you know, for the previous 370 years, because we were told by a member of industry, fortunately telling the truth, that they have always been on the bottom and must be on the bottom, because if they are actually fishing more off the bottom, they will intercept more salmon. So this is a common factor, you know, at the council. They pit one resource against another. So, you know, they try to get the salmon advocates, you know, saying, yeah, who cares about the crab that are on the bottom? But the many of the crab fishermen and the subsistence fishermen in river are not falling for that divisive tactic. We think that the council should be paying attention to the food web, and they talk about their striving for ecosystem-based management, but they really seem to be dedicated to their single-species management of getting the pollock and minimizing any impact to any other resource. That's all I've got at this point, unless there's some questions I might be able to answer.
This is Jude again. Either Virgil or Jim, what do you think of the opinion that the NOAA has decided that the Chinook are not a species of concern, which is not federal parlance, but state parlance, but you get the idea, I hope.
Yeah, this is Jim again. We, you know, having been involved in the council only a few short years and then being away from it for two, but back in 2023, in speaking with John Curlin, who runs Alaska region of NOAA Fisheries or the National Marine Fisheries Service, that's the same thing, he really said they have no position to even speak about salmon. Of course, the national standards in the Magnuson-Stevens Act do require them to minimize bycatch, quote, to the extent practicable. And they are also supposed to be looking and using a precautionary approach to management, but they have a very different understanding of what that means. Compared to the way I was trained, you know, when you, in the light of data uncertainty, you hold back, you know, to make sure that the resource is not overfished. And in the council process, it is more, unless you have data proving you need to slow down on the pollock harvest, you keep fishing as normal. And so they have, I think that the trawl fleet, the pollock fleet, does have a lot more information than that they keep to themselves, and they have done a fair job of trying to avoid chum, and but that's an ongoing concern. We did both the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission and, you know, staff as well as Cusco River Intertribal Fish Commission did meet with the new executive director of the ATSI Processors Association, Matt Tinning, I believe is his name, and he seems perhaps more approachable than his predecessor, Stephanie Madsen, but they really were trying to work with having more information exchange to the commission, to both commissions, to be able to report more of the what they're seeing in season. So we're going to keep our fingers crossed that they follow through with that. But that meeting occurred just a day after that individual wrote a scathing article about how this one particular foundation was funding all of these organizations, including the fish commissions, to lie, you know, and all of this. So they're really stepping up their PR campaign. I helped my buddy, Senator Mike Cronk, get a letter from him himself and Senator Yunt from the Matsu Valley about their ongoing concerns. And Senator Cronk told me he is not backing down. We need to take back our Alaskan fisheries. And so I encourage you to reach out to Senator Cronk if you're in his district and thank him and keep going, you know. I think the industry sees that we are all not backing down and not going to just stop going to those meetings. And so they're ratcheting up their whole PR and making some outlandish statements. The advisory panel that Eva Dawn Burke serves as the first, you know, long-term, she's actually the second tribal nominated and appointed by the council member of the advisory panel. The advisory panel is chaired now by an employee of Trident, and there was discussions of even setting allowable biological catches above the maximum because of the president's administration's executive order to increase marine seafood production, et cetera. So it's time to engage and keep the pressure that so many tribes and fishermen throughout AYK placed in order to get the Chum bycatch measure, you know, started in the federal rulemaking process. It's still going to be at least a year and a half, I guess, for that rule to be finalized, which is a bit concerning given what we've seen happen with the Area M Board of Fish regulations. So we are hoping to keep monitoring that as it gets published in the Federal Register to make sure there is no similar effort to remove that chum bycatch cap, et cetera. So hopefully that is at least a little summary of the June meeting. Regarding the salmon bycatch genetics, there was no action. That was just informational, and so we'll be looking forward to getting a more finalized version, as well as the chum genetics information. That was not provided to the council, and it would have been nice for us to have that data actually as we moved into the February council meeting to support the chum bycatch cap and time and area closures to protect migrating chum salmon. Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission did cite and provided, you know, a summary graphics of the preliminary genetics on king salmon to the council and basically gave them a heads up that it's time to relook at what the Chinook cap is and the Three River Index because it is still too much given how much worse the salmon returns have gotten to. So the two fish commissions from Yukon and Kuskokwim, as well as the Association of Village Council Presidents, we will be working on developing a white paper to support that effort in the coming year or so to be able to then try to bring that to the council's attention and strive for further reductions in Chinook bycatch numbers.
Jim, did you say chum salmon or chump salmon?
Chum salmon, they also collected genetics from the bycatch in the pollock fishery, and those data have not been made even preliminarily available to the public.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim, for all your great information. It's great to have that update from you.
You bet. And I will be endeavoring to not miss calls as much as I can, although I know Olivia and I with the Fish Commission and as well as some others will be doing a lot of travel this summer to reach out and build relationships with communities downriver and even in Canada. So, but we'll do our best to dial in. Olivia is on the call. She's driving and didn't have much to add at this point. She just started with the Fish Commission last week.
Yes,
so, but you'll be hearing more from both of us throughout the summer. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jim. Yes, we did hear from her last week. We've got a good 78 people on the call today right now. Again, I'm opening up the floor for any comments or questions.
Serena. Hey, Serena.
We'll go with the lady first, John. Ladies first, and then we'll get go to you. Thank you.
Okay, hey, just really quick. This is Jasmine Bent, Communications Director for the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission. I just wanted to, regarding everything Jim just shared, really good information, but I wanted to let you all know our Fish Commission Facebook is down. Otherwise, we would be getting a lot of this information out. So as we work to resolve that issue, I'm going to be putting a lot of what Jim mentioned onto our website, and our website is yritfc.org. So I'm going to put that up today if anybody wants to look at kind of more visuals of what Jim had mentioned regarding the bycatch letter.
Great. Thank you, Jasmine. Again, the floor is open for any questions or comments. John Lamont, and then I believe there's someone else on the line.
Hey, Serena?
Yes, go ahead, John.
Hey, I just, before I forget, I want to make it known that you did an excellent opinion statement in the daily paper that I read. Thank you for sharing that information.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, guys. This is Basil again. Can you hear me?
Yes, Basil, go ahead.
While we're on the topic of salmon and what they eat and bottom trawling and all that kind of useful information, there on the lower Yukon River down here, we harvest eels every fall. And it's a very common practice, but for years the eels disappeared, and then a lot of the elders were telling us, well, that's what the salmon eat, so expect to fall in the salmon. And sure enough, the salmon are kind of, they did dwindle down quite a bit since the eels disappeared, but these last probably 2 years, we were able to get some pretty decent eel runs, and that's a promising sight, and that does have, it is in direct relation to the bottom trawling and what the salmon eat, because we saw it firsthand, and the older folks told us about it. So hopefully, you know, we've been seeing a little bit more eels these last few years than the last, the previous 10 years before that. So that's a promising sight, and that is directly tied into the habitat of the bottom of the sea, and what Jim, I think, was just saying about bottom trawling and destroying that habitat and things, not only the salmon bycatch, but what the salmon are eating too. So I just thought I'd throw that in there. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Basil.
Hey, Serena?
Yes, go ahead.
I forgot, since Jim was on, he brought it up, but he didn't mention anything about it. But I'd really appreciate those experts who can tell us, not at this meeting, but maybe through the website, the Yukon Inter Tribal Fish Commission website. You know, years ago when trawlers would incidentally harvest salmon shark and kill them, now they don't. And the salmon shark are out there in great numbers. And I believe Virgil is probably the one who kicked my memory years ago about the salmon sharks. Now with so many of them, that's one of the factors. They their nutrients, some of their main nutrients are Chinook salmon or immature Chinook salmon. I might be wrong, but Virgil might be able to revamp that story for me. Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing it up, Jim and Serena.
Thanks, John. We can definitely have Sabrina Garcia. She's an expert in salmon sharks, and we could have her on the call later on in the month or beginning of July.
Brianna, for that.
You're welcome. Again, the floor is open for any last comments or questions. Okay, hearing none, just a reminder that our five Canadian representatives will be flying into Anchorage tonight. We'll be having an orientation, and tomorrow we'll be going over to the genetics lab at EVFNG and make our way down to Emonic tomorrow afternoon, and going to St. Mary's and Pilot Station. So if you are in those communities, please stop us, say hi, ask some questions, make a friend. We can't wait to get out there. We'll see you out in the Lower River. Thanks for taking the time today to chime in, provide your comments and questions. We'll talk to you next week at 1 o'clock.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Have a good night, John.
Thanks,
Serena.
Thank you.
And all your team.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Katie.
Good job today, guys.
Thanks, Basil.